Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Today is Thursday, October 6th. Amanda Borshel Dan here with our diplomatic correspondent, Lizer Berman, and our health reporter, Nathan Jeff A. Hello to you both.
Hello, Amanda. Hello, Lizer. Great to see you.
Hello, Amanda. Hello, Nathan.
Good to see you. Lizer, let's start with you. On Monday in Brussels, the EU and the Israel Association Council met for the first time in a decade. First of all, what is this council and why is this significant?
Sure. So when Israel came to an association agreement with the EU, part of this agreement is that every year, so it's an annual meeting, the EU foreign ministers and the head of the EU's foreign policy is supposed to meet in person with senior Israeli representatives, whether it's the foreign minister or even the prime minister, and speak about areas of mutual concern. Now, the last time this happened, as you said, was July 2012. Afterward, Israel cut off the meetings initially because of demands from the EU over policies toward the West Bank and marking items that come from the West Bank. So that was cut off then by Foreign Minister Lieberman at the time. In subsequent years, it seems that individual member states in Europe, mostly Northern Western Europe, have gotten in the way of reconvening the meeting. Once it wasn't happening, it was hard to get it going again. This was a priority, a foreign policy priority of Lapid as foreign minister and now as prime minister, and he succeeded in getting the EU and Israel back to the table. This is no small feat. That means all 27 EU member states have to agree to do it. That includes countries like Luxembourg and France, which have been difficult toward Israel in these multilateral fora. So that very fact of meeting it, I think, is a foreign policy win for Lapid. Now you ask, or you might wonder, what are they talking about? What are they dealing with? On the Israel side, it was several things which are pretty predictable. Iran, right? So you have the E3, two of which are in the EU, Germany and France. So that is certainly something Israel emphasized ahead of time and Israel wants to bring up. There's also a number of important research, scientific, and cultural agreements with Europe that need to be spoken about. And Israel also pointed at things like roaming charges for Israelis in Europe, and they want to come to agreement to bring those down, which is pretty low-hanging fruit and works for both sides. Trade, Israel's position in the natural gas mix or the energy mix in Europe in the wake of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Those are all things Israel wanted to talk about. It is quite clear, though, from the EU statement ahead of time and from EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell that they wanted to talk about Palestinians. So I was able to review all 16 pages of the EU statement from that meeting, and I think 21 out of the 56 sections or paragraphs were about Palestinians, human rights, the status of Christians and the status quo in Jerusalem, the killing of Shirin Abu Akleh, Gaza Strip, all these things that are obviously uncomfortable for Israel that aren't directly connected with the EU, but clearly this is, even though the EU is willing to sit with Israel, they're very eager to press Israel on the Palestinians. So while they're not agreeing on those things, they're back at the table. I would also add that Lapid did not make the trip himself, even though the initial press releases said that he would lead the trip and it was unclear whether he would come. He appointed Intelligence Minister Elazar Stern from his Yesh Atid party to physically be there, and he dialed in. So that meeting happened, and I'm hopefully going to speak to some European diplomats today to get a sense of what happened at the table and whether there's any movement or maybe some blowups at the table that we haven't heard about yet.
So it sounds like this was a mutual airing of grievances in a way. And do you think that there'll be follow-up to this? Will there be another meeting or will we wait another decade for such a meeting?
That's a very good question. I think the grievances mostly came from the EU side. Lapid, in his speech beforehand, which I watched, focused on the shared values, shared democratic, liberal democratic front against Iran, against fake news and things like that, against Russia even. He emphasized what Israel is doing to prop up the PA, Palestinian Authority. So he was focusing on the shared values and the areas of concord. The EU, it seems, as they do, a lot of the individual states like Germany, like France, are very positive in their bilateral relations, but they use these multilateral opportunities to bash Israel over the Palestinians. And I think that's what it was. Will it happen again? Depends on the elections, right? We can certainly see if Netanyahu comes back into power, He'll start focusing on the way Israel treats, EU treats the West Bank and its unfairness toward Israel as a reason to not meet again. Depends also who the foreign minister is. But if Lapid or some sort of constellation where Lapid is dominant in Israel's foreign policy, then I think we'll certainly see it again next year.
Okay. Now, we promised our listeners earlier in the week that we'd do a follow-up to the Lebanon maritime potential deal. Is it a deal? Is it a done deal? What's happening here?
That's a very good question, and I'm glad you phrased it like that. It is not a done deal. It seemed like a few days ago and really on Sunday that it was basically a done deal. I think Israel has been selling it a little bit too hard, at least from Lebanese media reports, some of which are associated with Hezbollah, some of these outlets. Lebanon is not agreeing to some of the things that Israel is touting. So Lebanon is insistent, according to Lebanese media, that it is not recognizing this line of buoys that stretch out for 5 kilometers from Rosh HaNikra as an international border. It's not going to lead to any sort of land border recognition. Israeli officials want there to be a signing ceremony with officials from both sides in the same room or at the same place. Lebanon seems to be objecting to that adamantly. Lebanon is trying to downplay the Israel connection as much as possible and present this as a victory. So it's unclear. What we have today is the security cabinet in Israel is going to vote on it. It's not going to full Knesset at this point. And we also have to see what the Lebanese objections were. We know that over the last couple of days where we were busy fasting and praying in Yom Kippurin that the Lebanese told the Americans that they had some objections. The Americans are saying that, or at least, American sources are saying that these objections are not poison pills. They're not going to torpedo the whole thing, but we really have to see. And obviously, as we keep saying, this is election season in Israel. Lapid has been getting a lot of flack from his political opponents, especially Netanyahu, that he is giving in to the Lebanese. So this also becomes an election issue, and that certainly complicates things on the Israeli side. It also gives more imperative to get this done. I think the Americans realize that if Netanyahu gets into power, this becomes much less likely. There's also the midterms in the United States. There's also the end of the Lebanese president's term coming up all at the same time. So there is a window here that if we're going to get it done, it would have to be basically now.
Fascinating. Thank you so much. And we'll definitely follow up again. We're going to a short break now.
Israel will be going back to the voting booths on November 1st. It is final.
Welcome to Paralyzed Nation. This is Israel's fifth election in less than 4 years. But what are these elections actually about?
The politics of deadlock.
A face-off between populist identitarian politics and the effort to preserve Israel as a liberal democracy.
Small shifts at the margins.
I don't think we're going to have a solution. We're heading towards another deadlock.
The rise and the mainstreaming of what we might politely call the far right.
A referendum on Netanyahu.
I'm Amanda Borchel-Dan. Join me and our Times of Israel political analysts,
Chaviv Retigur,
Jeremy Sharon,
Carrie Keller-Lynn,
Tal Schneider,
David Horowitz,
as we drill down on these hard-to-answer questions in this limited edition podcast series that is exclusively for our Times of Israel community. Just go to timesofisrael.com/paralyzed to join our community if you haven't already, and to access the exclusive podcast starting October 6th. Welcome to Paralyzed Nation. And we're back. Nathan, you brought us new research, a collaboration between the Weizmann Institute of Science and the University of California San Diego School of Medicine that found that hunting for fungus in the human body may offer a brand new method for early detection of cancer, as well as information that could shape prognosis and treatment plans. So really, we're hunting for mushrooms here? What's going on?
Yes, indeed. There's been some fascinating research that has shown that you can actually detect in the blood of people, or it seems that you can detect in the blood of people, traces of fungus that could be a telltale sign of cancer. And this Israeli team with their collaborators decided to look at the question of fungus. When people have tumors, are there certain funguses or traces or signs of certain funguses that actually appear and can be detected even in their blood? And the answer seems to be yes. Now, what the scientists have discovered is that there seem to be signatures of certain funguses in the blood of people when they have tumors. And why is that so useful? Why is that so exciting? Why is that so interesting? Because essentially it could pave the way, and I stress this is not something that's going to happen tomorrow or the day after. This is a very long process. But it could lead to a whole new realm of research that basically focuses around developing tests to pick up very early signs of cancer. Because if cancer tumors do give off signatures of fungus into the blood, and we can catch those early enough, this could be a great early detection method.
And it's not only for detection, but it's also for treatment, according to, well, your article, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Because any new insights of this kind that we have can basically just broaden the base of knowledge that scientists have. And they can use that broadened knowledge to work in every area. So that's detection, that's treatment. It's like finding a whole new realm to explore within the area of cancer research. So quite literally, we could look back on this in a few years and say, hey, this was the moment that kind of opened the door to a new area within cancer research.
That's wonderful. And now the other research story we're going to discuss is so near and dear to my heart. Researchers at Tel Aviv University believe they have identified a key mechanism that leads skin cancer to prompt brain cancer. This is exactly how my brother died in 1995. Now, you say in your article that so far it's only been tested on human tissue in lab conditions, but when do the researchers think it could actually lead to some prevention?
Obviously, we all feel for you with that kind of background within your family, Amanda. What a lot of people don't know is that skin cancer patients do often develop brain tumors afterwards. And this is kind of very important research, which suggests basically that skin cancer cells cause normal cells to, I said in my article, go rogue by expressing two particular proteins, CCR2 and CCR4. And basically, kind of this seems to affect certain cells in the brain and give a context in which brain tumors can develop. So that's the background to the research. I would urge listeners who are interested in this to check out the original piece on Times of Israel. We don't know exactly how long it will take to translate this into kind of something that will help in a clinical sense. But it does seem that this is kind of, very reliable and promising research, peer-reviewed, and with findings that could theoretically one day kind of help prevent a lot of tragic stories.
Okay, Nathan, we are obviously going to follow up on this. Now, this next story is just wild to me. A 46-year-old Israeli woman recently gave birth 20 years after freezing her ovary due to, unfortunately, cancer treatments in her mid-20s. She defrosted part of it, reversed her menopause, and recently got pregnant without IVF and has now given birth to a healthy baby girl. Explain how this could possibly have happened.
Okay, Amanda, so we have an Israeli woman called Svia. She gets cancer in her 20s, and at that point, she freezes an ovary, not really knowing what that will make possible in the future because the technology then was very limited. 10 years later, she has a transplant, a piece of that ovary transplanted back to herself. She successfully gets pregnant and has a baby. Then about another 10 years passes and she says that she wants to have another baby. But by this point, the ovary that she had transplanted back into herself is no longer operational and she's entered menopause. So if she wants to get pregnant again, she needs another ovarian transplant. She goes to her doctor, Professor Ravel, and says, I need another ovarian transplant. He's delighted to oblige, does another ovarian transplant, which means a piece of her own ovary, back to her. Okay, so fast forward 9 months, and we have this woman, Svia, 20 years after recovering from cancer, now aged 46, giving birth to a healthy baby. A really uplifting, interesting, exciting story that is a slice of medical technology advancing.
So mazel tov to Svia. And on that note, we will end today's Daily Briefing. Thank you so much, Nathan. Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time.
Shalom.